All right, the hole we're dreaming off together is in the woods, and it is one of our favorite holes because it is demanding and it is a par three. The shot shape is a flat release with a subtle hyzer finish. This basket is usually elevated since on tour. And OB is in your mind off the tee shot, really. You're actually teeing off from OB. And you need to hit a gap, cross inbounds, and you still probably have about 200 feet to cover if you hit the gap to the basket once you're inbounds. There's lots of trees on the right. There's a couple trees on the left that you could kick early and kick OB over a brick wall.
16 at Brewster Ridge.
15 at Brewster Ridge. 15
you at Brewster Ridge.
Correct. Very good. All one of our favorite holes because the course is just a breeze until you get to that hole.
That's a scary hole.
It's one of the scariest holes in the world.
I always feel like I'm going to blow up on it.
It's just one of those holes where in practice it feels unmissable, and then you step up in tournament and you're just questioning your existence.
Calvin Heimberg and Eric Oakley got in a big argument about that hole when we were staying together in 2020. Eric was against that hole and Calvin was pro that hole.
Uh-huh.
And it actually got pretty heated.
I mean, that hole will do it. I mean, I think it's good in the sense that good shots will get rewarded. I have seen bad shots get really lucky and extremely punished. So
you know who likes that hole?
You?
Aaron Gossage. He loves OB in the woods.
That is true. Aaron just wants longer, harder, tighter.
Mm-hmm. He's like a guy who likes a nice, strong IPA.
Sure.
he likes things that most people wouldn't like, but it's like intense and strong and like it makes your face pucker.
If I find out in about 20 years that he's biking the Continental Divide Trail and Pacific Crest Trail in a loop, I wouldn't be surprised. He's one of those guys who would just go to some extreme length to do some physical challenge and not blink twice. He's hardcore.
He definitely is hardcore.
I love watching Aaron. He has passion. He has some good points. I disagree with him on most course design things, but he's very entitled to his opinion, and I think it's really cool.
I like that he speaks his mind.
Yeah, I like that he speaks his mind, and he tries to make disc golf better.
He really does. He's on the player board now.
He is.
He got elected,
he's a council member.
He's in a position to bring positive change to our sport. So, shout out Aaron Gossage if you're listening.
Welcome back to the show, ladies and gentlemen. Crushed Pepper is back. We are in-person podcast this week in Nashville, Tennessee, and it's the day before round one.
An eagle is suspended in the air in an egg chair.
I'm floating right now.
We all wish this was a video podcast at this point.
Well, there actually will be a little clip of eagle in the egg chair ending up on MVP's Instagram at some point in the next 48 hours. So fear not, Scoville units. There will be little brief clips of episode recordings now and again. And last week I made a big purchase at the start of the off week, I suppose before even the recording of our previous episode. And I bought a dream camera of mine, the Sony a7 S3, and essentially added a cinema camera to my little toolkit. I have a kind of like a broadcast camera for filming practice rounds, and then obviously a lot of stuff that we film on my phone. And this third option is certainly the most expensive, But also the quality is supposed to be, well, supposed to be, it is. I filmed tons of content on A7, S3, including our show, Beyond Disc Golf, was filmed on two of those cameras.
You're very familiar with the product?
Very familiar. Yeah, very surprised and happy that this was a justifiable expense for me this year.
I think I'm going to buy one too for my YouTube channel.
Well, there you go.
Should I buy one?
Hey, you know, if you got...
Even though my cameraman now is a total Canon.
Mm-hmm.
Canon media creator.
Canon man.
Yeah, he is a Canon man.
And, I mean, seeing the footage that comes out of his camera is pretty damn convincing. But, I mean, he also has, like, it's like a $4,000 or $5,000 camera, I think.
I mean, that's what I just bought.
No, the A7S3 is like three.
3.4 plus a $1,000 lens. So
yeah, I guess, yeah, it is a good camera. But he has like this real cinema camera that just looks like... It's like that next level of niceness.
I mean, I think some of it is the camera and some of it is what he does on the back end of picking the right filter off the bat to use, the right LUT, as we call it in the video world, and then also... If he does any color correction on the back end, so that will make anything look really, really nice, no matter what you're starting out, you're shooting on. And then Canon, Canon tends to look a little warmer than Sony, so it's a little bit more of a kind of a...
Cozy?
A little cozy vibe, yes, and Sony's a little bit, little more on the blue side, a little colder, and does really well in low light. But
Simon,
I think,
likes cozy.
Simon's a cozy boy. This is a cozy little Airbnb we're staying at, but
another dirt road.
Five for five.
4 for 4.
We're living in a country song.
Yeah, 4 for 4.
Yeah, I mean, there's multiple benefits, of course. This is very private. You actually get some acreage, which is nice, of course, for if you want to make vlogs, you can just go to your front or backyard and throw some shots. Like, that's been obviously really fun, and we've used that a lot. And the prices, the further away you get from major cities, I mean, the prices obviously get more and more reasonable. And I kind of really enjoy this, like, kind of secluded, peaceful nature surroundings. And I mean, I think I'm going to stick with my streak I have going on with the dirt roads. At the end of a dirt road, everything's better.
I have a fear that Kansas City might break the streak because I already looked at the pictures. Yeah. It looks like a driveway to me.
Yeah, Kansas City is going to be a different one. But I think after that, we're going to be back. Actually, no, after that, we're going to California.
California.
That's also going to be a neighborhood one.
Yeah, but then we have a bungalow in Shelton. So
that one looks sweet. It's right on a lake.
Yeah.
Oh, that's, I can't wait
big,
for that
big
one.
Shout out to Simon Lizotte. I jokingly call him an Airbnb daddy. And I did the same to Calvin Heimberg, because he's been booking a lot of Airbnbs for his little crew of Madison and Brad. Although I know Madison booked the one this week, but he's been doing a lot of that booking. And I joked at him. I said, you and Simon, you guys are booking the big Airbnbs, and then you got your little squad. And this has become quite the usual group of suspects this whole year. We've got... let's go through the list of our supporting cast. We've got Cal Longquist, Eli Swanson, Harry Chase. Those guys have been here every week. And then Casey White and Ellie are here this week.
Did you say Harold?
Were here in Florida. Yeah, Harry Chase.
You said Harry, okay.
Yeah. And then obviously you and Dustin and me. And it's been a great little crew. And Eagle's been with us twice, once.
One time,
but
in
then
Austin.
with the van, you know, he's always around. He comes one night a week.
Hey,
at
we
least.
Got a podcast to do.
Yes, exactly. And this is one of my favorite little spots that we've done it. This is a sweet little room with a,
and it's only like 26 minutes from the course.
Mm-hmm.
So it's really not that bad.
No,
totally reasonable. And speaking of Cal Longquist, I just remembered we had just one of the greatest vlog moments in memory that I have. That was so fun. Cal freaking brought his cello on the road, and kind of just for fun this morning, I sent him a little YouTube clip of like a cello guitar duo, or like a duet, I guess you would call it. And he learned it today, and then we played it on the porch. One take, zero mistakes.
No way.
And it was, I was inspired.
I can't wait to watch that.
Yeah, I need to watch it for that.
It was, I mean, That was kind of nice.
Wow.
He messaged me last week. Or no, he called me. He had gone home. There's some people, for me, it doesn't make any sense to drive home. But for, there's some people, if they can do it within, if they can get home within a day of driving, they'll drive home. And Zach Melton is another guy I always think of who would do these crazy drives, like to and from these pro tour events. For me, it's like once I'm on the road, I'm on the road. I don't want to do huge hauls. But Cal went home and he called me and he asked, because he's going home after this event as well. And so he asked if it would be weird or awkward for him to bring his cello out. And I was like, well, no, because it's going to be 1 week out of whatever, 40 weeks on tour. So I think for 1 week, everybody won't mind at all. And he's like very conscious of the fact that he loves classical music and basically only classical music. And that's not everyone's taste. So he's just like really proactive about before he like kind of feels like he's impeding with his cello, but I thought it was great. He serenaded us and in the hot tub the first night. We had a private concert. We're just sitting there in the hot tub with the Jets on, and then Cal was there, so we turned the Jets off, and there he is just playing this beautiful tune for me and Simon out in the woods in a hot tub.
No cameras either. It was magical.
It was quite unbelievable.
The Jets go off, the cello comes on.
Well, yeah, we would have missed out on a lot of that, a lot of the melody, I think, if we had had the droning of the Jets on. But, man, we've had quite the weather this week, and it's not really slowing down. We've had multiple tornado warnings. I know everybody in our house was up for at least an hour and a half from 4:30 till 6 in the morning, checking, watching. The course is getting pounded. Talk to me about your own experiences the last few days with Mother Nature.
I want to hear the van story because we're in a house that's a different level than van.
I mean, it wasn't anything too crazy for us. Before the practice round, the MVP practice round yesterday, I saw Seth Muncy in the parking lot. Shout out to him because he's the health and safety coordinator guy you want to talk to on the Pro Tour. And he was warning me that there's legitimately threats of tornadoes yesterday. And I was proactive. I was scoping out what the storm might do. And I realized that the more south we could be, the better. So Ratana's sister-in-law and brother live in Murfreesboro, Tennessee. So we drove our van down there, which is about 25 minutes south of the course, and we had no real issues. We did get an alert on our phone at around 6 a.m. They actually came out and knocked on our van saying that there's a tornado watch in the area, but I looked at the radar and just drove even a little bit more south, like 20 minutes, and we actually never even got rained on. So we were able to get out unscathed. I was worried about our life, of course, but mostly the van, because I didn't want any significant hail damage to the solar panels on top. But we got out unscathed, luckily.
I wonder if they could make like a cover for your solar panels to
protect. I'm sure they do, but I haven't looked
into it. I
suppose
it's a pretty rare need.
Uh-huh.
It's not really something you'd want to lug around for like the two nights out of the year.
It would have to be a pretty hefty cover because if you're getting like baseball size hail, that's probably still going to be bad for them. There's going to be some pretty heavy impact.
Yeah. Yep. But so far, so good. The match play event was canceled today. In fact, nobody was able to go play on the course today. Yeah. Have you guys seen any footage from the course?
Play
what was
canceled.
Going on today? Them? Did you see any of the staff like clearing up all those creeks and
all that? I crazy saw footage. Was own. She posted on our DGPT players page that hole 1 and hole 16 was pretty much completely flooded. But Simon showing me a picture right now, and it looks still pretty flooded, but a lot better than Owen's picture. It looked like a lake from earlier. So I think they're probably working really hard as we speak to clean things up, because there's a pro tour starting tomorrow morning. And
I talked to two different players today who were out at the course helping the staff.
Wow.
Yeah, I talked to Calvin Heimberg and to Holland Hanley. They both went out to the course, and they said there was like five or six other pros also out there, all helping the staff like unclog these dams.
Well, this makes me feel bad for not showing up.
And Calvin said that there's like a bridge now on hole one, and they said that they were unclogging dams and breaking down tents and helping them install temporary bridges. And Holland told me the same. And I think Bradley Williams was out there. And so shout out to some of the players for going and helping the staff. And obviously, you know, it's easy for us to feel like this is all kind of a nightmare and an inconvenience when it's happening. But for the people busting their butts trying to put these events on, it's like a massive, massive undertaking.
Oh, it's so frustrating.
It's so frustrating for them.
It's over a year of planning just for one storm that you had no idea was going to happen to completely derail most of your plans. It's
And everybody's going to complain. Everybody's going to complain and remember this tournament for all the mud and all the sloshiness of the course. And even with that, like, all these dozens of people went out and dedicated 5 or 6 hours to kind of clean the course up. And that's the part I hope we remember is just like, yes, it's going to look probably not ideal. And I'm sure the local operating committee would love to showcase their beauty at the best time of the year. So just keep that in perspective when you're watching this weekend, because you can't control.
I think every player one day should be forced to have to run an event just so everyone knows what goes into it and all the terrible parts of it and the sacrifices it takes. I've never done it. I can only imagine, but it's probably pretty unthankful to be hosting these caliber of events, especially on the disc golf tour, where there's obviously so little funds and you're basically just doing it for the love of the game.
Yep.
Mm-hmm.
So shout out to all the TDs out there, all the volunteers, even though we get out there and sometimes we get frustrated with our own game and that's going to be in our head, we always will appreciate you guys.
So specifically this week, shout out to Zach Hoy, who's the TD this week here at Music City Open. I met him and talked to him on Tuesday afternoon. Super great guy. Shout out to him and his whole team for all the work that they're doing. And then obviously huge shout out to the Pro Tour Ops guys. You got Max, you've got Andrew, you've got Greg, you've got Evan. Those guys kick butt every week, to try to make all these properties playable. And also, you know, guys like Seth and Evan, I feel like each week I don't even have to think about the weather all that much because they do all the research and give us the information that we need every week, and it is super valuable too. I mean, I went straight last night at 4:30 in the morning. First thing I did was go to the players group. Seth had posted the link. Yeah, he's up. He's posted like 3 links to live streams, and everybody in our house was watching one of those live streams last night. There was no power on. There was no TV to get us to the local weather channel. Our Starlink died. And
wow.
And Seth Muncy, like, essentially, you know, without those links, like, I would have never found Severe Weather Nashville YouTube channel. And definitely made me feel secure last night when we were watching these supercells rotating around us. So, yeah, definitely one of those weeks where maybe the final product isn't the prettiest from the course's standpoint, but the fact that we get a product at all is in huge part to dozens of people who are doing like what Eagle said or what Simon said, thankless work out there.
Yeah.
And that's why we're thanking you.
Yep. Exactly.
Let's talk about practice a bit. I only got one practice round this week, which I'm a bit sad about because my whole goal this year.
That's 9 more holes than last year.
Actually, it's 10.
10 more holes than last year.
Yeah. Last year I walked off after 8 because my back was in such pain. But no, this year physically I feel great. My whole goal this year was to get 2 practice rounds before each event, and I got that before Florida and I got that before Waco. And then Austin, I didn't because we had two courses and 3 days we had to practice and I took an off day. So that's my major excuse for my performance in Austin. And this week I didn't get it either. But here I have obviously much bigger things on my mind. But it's, I don't think it's ever happened that I haven't played the course the day before the tournament. I know it's kind of a thing that some players like to take the day before off because they have all week to practice. Cause
that's a Casey White
thing. Yeah, I think Eagle has done that in the past.
I do it anytime the weather's not good.
Yeah, so for me, definitely, I don't feel like I'm the most well-prepared this week. I'm not sure how many people only got one practice round, but it is what it is. No excuses, and we'll see what happens tomorrow. And the practice round was kind of special this week because we got to play with Silva. And the video actually just dropped. I just watched the first 5 or 6 holes, and it was a battle out there. Even on camera, it translated into a battle with the elements.
Definitely.
Oh, it was a slog. There's just like, you know, in sometimes in the editing world, you can make it, you can make things that weren't fun look fun. And Mother Nature doesn't care about that. The wind just translates across the screen, and it was. I could tell like 5 or 6 holes in that it was going to be one of those brutal. I mean, you know, Austin wasn't that different. Austin was also super windy. The Austin practice round.
Yeah,
I think it was windier than the rest of the tournament days that practice round.
For sure.
And then this was like basically twice as windy probably as anything we're going to see this weekend.
Yeah, it's really slowing down. Like tomorrow is going to be like a high of 15 miles an hour, which I mean for us that's like laughable basically at this point.
It does say gusts up to 32 miles per hour.
What? Yeah. We have different apps. I trust my app.
You like your weather better?
I like my weather better.
There's going to be what I'm seeing for the whole week is heavy gusts of wind.
Well, we can do gusty, especially if we play on the later tee times. It won't be that bad.
The gusts will blow only when I throw.
Same. We play together tomorrow.
We do play together
tomorrow.
What
are we going to do?
We're going to shred.
We're going to shred?
Mm-hmm.
All right, deal.
We're going to shred alongside
Dickerson.
Chris Dickerson and Austin Turner. Is this another round sponsored event? Okay.
Yep.
That makes sense. And Chris Dickerson obviously is Tennessee.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So we have previous champion. The MVP pick.
Mm-hmm.
Oh yeah.
Austin being
another round's
pick, and then local pick Chris Dickerson.
That's how it shaped
up. How many time Music City Open champion is Chris Dickerson? Because you are 3 and he's 4 maybe 5.
I would guess something like that.
Yeah, I wouldn't be surprised.
Well, isn't his like Tennessee State champion run like 12 in a row or something like that?
That would not surprise
something like
me.
That's what I think have in mind with Chris.
Tennessee States.
But I think he still plays a handful of local events a month.
Yep.
Basically. No, and he wins all of them. So.
I think he still makes a point of playing states every year.
Yeah, I think he has some crazy record when it comes to that tournament. I don't know what his Music City Open record is.
I do not know either. I'm just looking at the weather, and Saturday night into Sunday looks like another terrifying night. It could rain up to 2 inches. Oh, gosh. It doesn't show that much rain for the daytime of the tournaments. Maybe a little bit on Sunday for the FPO. But, man, all right, we're gonna have an event ahead of us.
Maybe we're going to swim.
Least. We're going to swim to the course.
We're going to swim from basket to tee pad to the next hole.
Well, let's talk a little bit about the changes out at Mill Ridge Park, and then I want to hear a bit of both of your game plans as far as like what you're trying to throw this week, and a little bit of maybe based on what you saw and based on the conditions, like who is going to be the type of player who can take it down? Like what are the intangibles that you want to see out of your winning competitor this weekend? And hopefully it's you guys. What is the resilience that needs to happen? Because it feels like everybody's bracing for a slog fest, in my opinion.
Yeah, I think it's going to be an endurance test a bit. And this is kind of the first real distance driver course of the year. In practice, I really noticed that I was out of the bag grabbing the same disc over and over, being my 14 speeds. The dimension came out of the bag basically on every hole for some shot, if it's forehand or backhand. And I think what it's going to take is, I mean, whoever is reading the wind properly, gets the right wind breaks at the right time, making the putts, and then has a monster backhand and forehand combination, it's going to be just so helpful out there. Because if you can throw overstable 400 feet, 450 feet with lefty, with forehands and same backhands thing. And lefties, if you have it, then I think that would be a pretty good recipe for this course. Because, man, they did not make it easier. They only made it tighter. They made it trickier. And in these conditions, I don't know, man. Anything under par, not too shabby.
Not too shabby. I'm throwing a lot of forehands out here.
Oh, yeah.
But I feel like I'm almost like Chandler Kramer at this point. I throw so many forehands all over the place. I actually had a week in Alabama, and I didn't allow myself to throw a forehand because I wanted to get better at throwing my backhand. But I think it is going to be an endurance test out there. Whoever can put the mud stains on their discs aside, they're going to need to have a strong mental game and know when to lay up, play smart, minimize mistakes while still scoring. I know for me, I'm just going to be playing the high percentage shot on pretty much every hole. And I feel like if I do that well, that'll place me up near the top of the leaderboard. The putter needs to be hot as well. You need to convert your looks if you get them out here. And a lot of overstable stuff. I put a Proton time-lapse in the bag, which is really overstable. I put a new dimension in the bag. I put an energy in the bag just in case it gets really windy. So I'll be relying on my overstable plastic this week at Millridge.
Well said. And Joey, you are still battling injury.
Yeah, I played one pain-free round of 18 holes at one of the little short courses near Jonesboro. And then next day went out and played the wooded section of Disc Side of Heaven called Towering Oaks. And yeah, I noticed it a little bit there, but wasn't really too upset. And then, yeah, just the next 2 days with the driving and yeah, between Monday, Tuesday, and then Wednesday mid-morning, I had walked the course 4 times in basically 36 hours to film 3 practice rounds as well as filming some content for Calvin and Brad on the first day. I actually had tried to play with them. That was the initial goal, but it already wasn't feeling great in my warm-up, and I had a hunch that I wasn't going to be able to handle like a high power shot, and sure enough, it kind of reared its head, and so I just shut myself down after 8 holes, and yeah, it's been frustrating. I'm trying to talk to Seth Muncy a little bit, but he's kind of up to his eyes right now. Dealing with the tornadoes and the course conditions. So that is, you know, a process that I definitely need to tackle this weekend. But yeah, the first like 3 or 4 days of the week, I'm pretty set with like the amount of work that I have to do. And so there's not like a ton of extra time for me to focus on that, which, you know, is one of the things that goes along with kind of doing 2 jobs as one person. But yeah, looking forward to trying to maybe get some more answers the next couple days. But yeah, it's going to be interesting to see how the field handles the conditions. This is my fourth time out to Mill Ridge. And I think that, man, it's just sad that they have to deal with the wet and the sogginess, because I do really think that this is probably the best version this course has been in. And mm-hmm. I really wanted to give a special note to all of the tree bunkers on the course. I would say, like, specifically maybe hole 10. No, let's see. Hole 8 now. Used to be hole 10. The par 4 over the water. And, like, 15. And there's a lot of those little sections of trees where they just cleaned everything out of it. Like, all of the brush, all of the undergrowth. A lot of the holes look really clean out there. And we'll see how it all holds up. But, yeah, I think it's going to be... I think you're going to see some new names up on the leaderboard just because of the conditions and whether or not the wind or rain is affecting the course during play, it's already done its damage. And so I think it does add a little bit of a toss-up element into this, because there are going to be some bigger names or some players that you expect to play well who are going to struggle in the mud. So I'm excited to see how it shapes out. But another successful week of filming for everybody, and we have another great place, and I'm like I said, I'm very happy to be out here despite the persisting back injury. We're 5 for 5 this year on dropping out of tournaments after an off season where I basically hadn't felt as good as I did coming into the start of the season, after any off season. So that's the part where it's probably the most frustrating. It's just based on the work that I had done leading into it. But it's just a learning curve about ramping up a little bit slower. So that's what I've taken away from this injury at the moment.
Yeah, that's very frustrating, because last year I was planning on starting my year at this event, and I was ready to go. Probably 10 days before the event, I threw my back out in Colorado in preparation to start throwing a bunch. I was going to Alabama early because there's a bunch of courses there I like to play that are on the shorter side. And literally the day before I got on the flight, my back went out, and it never gave me more empathy to people who have back pain until your back goes out. It is absolutely brutal, complete debilitating pain. And I was so frustrated because I was in the same boat as Joey. I put so much work in over the off season and I couldn't play. I had a press conference schedule that I had to basically go to and say, the shoulder's fine, but I can't play because my back hurts. And it felt like I was just being judged by everybody. I know I wasn't, but that's just what it felt like. And it just felt so bad. And then, of course, luckily I get better. And then my next tournament was Champions Cup at Northwood Black. First tournament of the year, which was an absolute rude awakening. But yeah, not being able to play because of an injury that you didn't expect, or like a shoulder injury, elbow injury from disc golf is something like you kind of expect in a weird kind of way, but an unsolicited back problem is like one of the most frustrating things you could ever dream of.
Yeah, it's really hard to rest it. That's my biggest problem.
Because you're still out here
walking,
and you probably don't have a lot of time to go to the gym or go to other like practitioners to help get you better, because your schedule's so packed.
Yeah, I mean, I managed to get my mobility routine in that I do, that's about 20 minutes every morning. Been pretty consistent with that, doing that, actually using Habit Share. He's in Habit Share, me and Eagle, ever since, boy, episode 2 maybe when you
one
mentioned
two,
it.
Yeah.
And I've been pretty consistent with that and going to the gym once a week. But yeah, the time is definitely limited. But definitely, it's like an interesting thing, because it's like as you become more successful in disc golf, essentially, if you financially, more financially successful as a disc golf player, it almost feels like you either get more time to be like focusing on an athlete. And that's how I see it from my perspective. But I think for anybody who's not doing the two job role, you probably get less time if you get more financially successful, because then you're wanted for all the extra shoots and all the extra press conferences and all of the extra obligations. And for me, it's like the opposite trajectory, because right now, a lot of the work that I'm doing is essentially to financially sustain a tour. Mm-hmm. And so if you want to start from scratch on tour as a disc golfer and not have any like outside income source other than just selling your discs and tournament cash, you better have a good sponsorship, and you better have mm-hmm. I mean, that is just not a deal that really exists for people who are like trying to make it. You do not get a contract in this sport that is going to like allow you to go out and like attempt to be a good player.
Most people are just using the money that they saved up, and they have basically one or two chances.
Yep.
And that's
one or two stretches one or two seasons mm-hmm. to get a contract that not only covers the expenses of touring, but also potentially puts you a little bit in the green.
I mean, even a good sponsorship that pays for all your tournaments and maybe a little bit of extra cash, that's really not enough even.
No, it's not even close. That's like, that's a huge chunk. It's, you know, if you're getting a tour card paid for by your sponsorship, that's, you know, a $6,000
mm-hmm.
expense. And that's a lot of money, but that's the tip of the iceberg when it comes to expenses on the road. I mean, you have to pay for whatever you choose to have your setup as. That's why a lot of people do go for the van. But if you're going to go for a brand new van with the van built,
I mean, a van build out is like, if you want to do it right.
You're pushing six figures.
Right. I mean, a lot of people are probably doing it for maybe like the cheapest you could do a van build out that's going to get you to and from and be somewhat comfortable is maybe 30K. Maybe.
Yeah.
And that's pretty much selling a bunch of stuff at home, packing up your life, getting rid of your rent, getting rid of your mortgage, and then you're slave to your car payment then.
Right.
So.
And so the media business for me is essentially like allows me to live the touring life of a like top 40 disc golfer in the world financially.
Mm-hmm.
But it essentially eats at least 50% of my time every week away from trying to be an athlete. And then when you're hurt and you can't practice, then that area becomes even skinnier because you're,
not just that you can't practice, you can't rest.
Yeah, you can't rest. And it's also like there's no, like, what's the point for me to practice right now? Like, I mean, there is a point, but it would be more beneficial for me to be doing my rehab to fix my back injury than it would to go out and, like, practice putt.
This becomes like a tough paradox that I found myself spiraling down when I had my shoulder injury, is because I wanted to go practice. But I, at the same time, it was like, should I practice? Because am I doing myself a disservice by going to throw? And that becomes a really tough spot because you walk such a fine line between stressing your body, but also trying to get better at what you're going to do.
Mm-hmm.
And my heart goes out to anybody who is going through some sort of injury that's being held back from something that they love. And I know all the Scoville units out there are eagerly awaiting the return of Joey Tomalley.
Yeah, I was really excited to show the Scoville units. I am really excited. I am. It's not like the season is over. I was
excited. It's just beginning.
I am really excited to show the amount of work that I put in, especially on the mental side. Like, I just feel like I'm a different competitor.
Even, the way you can look at it now, this is even more mental training.
Mm-hmm. Oh, for sure. Mm-hmm. I mean, it's not what I expected. Of all the mental like visualization and simulation I was doing for this year of like, okay, what are going to be like the possible like issues that you're going to mm-hmm. run into? Like, it's not going to be perfect. Like, and the things that have come up are not even close to what I predicted as like what were going to be the issues. Like, so mm-hmm. many things this year have worked out so smooth on the road. Like, the Airbnb situation every week has been amazing. And
you're welcome.
Yeah, I mean, absolutely. I mean, I without Simon, that we would be totally in a different like realm of touring, and I try to make that like apparent to not just Simon, but the two ladies that are traveling with me, and just like kind of keep it in perspective that like, you know, if you were Eli or Cal or Harry Chase in any other situation on tour, you're living out of your van. I mean, you're couch surfing and you're like hoping that you have find some place to sleep, and you probably have a van built out in whatever car your parents gave you, and you're just like roughing it. And these guys, and me included, and obviously I've, you know, put myself in a bit of a different situation now with the business I've created. But in 2021, I was that same guy. Every week I was like, Simon was like, well, where do you want to sleep? And I was just like, yep, I got my trifold mattress. Like, I'll just throw it in any little corner. And I mean, Simon said it back in 2021 that he was like, it was important to him to like support the younger up and comers. And there's a lot of us who have benefited immensely from that. And I said the same to Calvin and his crew.
We should start renting bigger places and having more people here. I want to be like a school of just disc golf, young and up and comers, just all staying under one roof. That'd be so cool. But before we move on, I want to round up the injury topic a little bit, because last week there was, I don't know if it was a reel that I watched or if it was part of the audiobook that I'm listening to, where some wise person said that if you're healthy, you have hundreds of problems. If you're not healthy, you have one problem. And I thought that stuck with me. It like really puts it into perspective that
totally
our health is literally the only thing that really matters. And once we lose it, every other problem just instantly goes away.
The start of this week, I felt probably the best I've felt in a long time. And then, of course, thinking that the next morning I wake up with a kink in my neck.
Yeah.
And then all of a sudden, that's the only thing I can think about. And it was just amazing. Exactly. It was like, oh my gosh, I felt so good. And I didn't even think this was an issue yesterday. And then all of a sudden, all I want is for it to be gone. It just made me so happy that in general that I'm healthy.
Yeah. Yeah. I definitely notice it with eating this year. It's like, I notice how much worse I feel when I'm not eating good. And it's been fortunate this year that like throughout sort of like the unexpected downfalls of this touring season so far, which have been very few. I mean, honestly, outside of being unhealthy, there's like uninjured or injured in my SI joint. There hasn't really been like anything that I can complain about, but yeah, it's crazy. Like there's been a few days where I definitely like splurged and had like too much ice cream or too much something. And since I cleaned up my diet this off season, now I can isolate like every time that mm-hmm. I feel like crap the next day. And it's like not even just your stomach, like it is everything. Like I feel so just like
lethargic, puffy.
Yes, puffy and like almost
brain
sick,
fog.
Almost sick. Yes, like a total brain fog. And mm-hmm. it was so kind of mind-boggling for me to realize that food had like 90% to do with that.
I had a similar experience last week.
Really?
Because I took a break from dealing with the kids for like an hour, and I went furniture shopping. We needed some bar stools for our kitchen, and the furniture place happened to be right next to Chick-fil-A. Oh, and I have not had Chick-fil-A since October last year. I actually haven't had any fast food since October, because my whole off season was, I mean, I did a 180 in my life with a lot of things. And I texted my wife and I'm like, oh, I'm so tempted to get Chick-fil-A. It's like right there. I haven't had it in 6 months. So I went and got Chick-fil-A and I felt so bad afterwards, physically. Like mentally, I could deal with the decision I've made. I committed and I was good with it. But physically, I was like, oh my God, I want to throw up. I feel
What was your order?
So bad. I just had some like 4 chicken tenders and some fries with Chick-fil-A sauce, like a bucket of Chick-fil-A sauce. But I mean, that first bite of Chick-fil-A is always like heaven if you don't eat it all the time. But man, afterwards, I regretted it so bad. And I was like, man, if you don't eat junk all the time, it makes you feel so bad.
When you do.
Somehow like when you eat junk all the time, you somehow manage.
Yeah, it doesn't make you feel bad.
It's your baseline.
Your body's just used to it.
You think you could get away, like if you eat healthy more often than not, you could get away with just one at a time, but you really can't.
It's so
bizarre.
If you
want to eat junk food, you got to eat only junk food to feel good.
Well, it's like if you went
Why
out.
Why did God make it that way? It does make sense.
If you went out in the sunlight every single day with no sunscreen on, you would eventually, after some discomfort, after months at the same sunlight, you would be nice and tan. Mm-hmm. But then and when you choose to just cover yourself all the time, then the one time you expose yourself to the sun, it's going to burn. Like,
it's really easy to see if you have a dirty river, if you just add more pollution and garbage to it, it's still going to be dirty. Mm-hmm. But if you have a clean river mm-hmm. and you put a little bit of pollution and garbage in it, it's going to stand out.
Yep. That's so true. It's all about how you're... Your baseline changes, I think, once mm-hmm. you start changing.
This is a philosophy podcast now.
I'm glad that I've done it. Mm-hmm. I'm glad that I've changed. And it's nice. I thought it would be so much harder to like resist those Chick-fil-A nights. And because of how much worse I feel now, it is easier to say no to the bad food because it makes you feel so bad and there is nothing else you can attribute it
it's
to.
Just a little bit of planning. You got to plan a little bit in advance. Maybe make a little bit more food. Save it for flavor. Save it for flavor.
Save it for flavor. It's the podcast
just,
name.
Save it for flavor. You just have to put a little bit more intention in. And it's really tough because say you get done late. And you're driving back, and the last thing you want to do is make food. And mm-hmm. you see Chick-fil-A. It's got you. It's like you're going to, 9 times out of 10, you're going to take that opportunity. You're going to run with it.
At least you have the
but
van.
You got to dig as deep as you possibly can and use your willpower, mental fortitude, and say no. Because the next day when you wake up and realize that you didn't succumb to junk food, you're going to feel so much better about yourself mentally, and you're going to be able to push forward and continue to make good decisions.
For you, it's even easier because you can't do the drive-thru.
But yeah, I can't even do the drive-thru.
You have to go in, and they have to see you breaking your pact.
I've actually never had Chick-fil-A, so I...
Ever?
I've never had Chick-fil-A. I've never had Wendy's. I've never really had fast food.
Yeah, don't start. There's no real point to it.
I've had McDonald's in Europe, in Finland.
I have a question. Is pizza the line between good food and fast food?
Oh, man. I mean, I was going to ask you about the no fast food thing, too, about Chipotle. Does that count as fast food in your book?
I don't like Chipotle anymore. Like, I had it recently, and... I just don't like their flavors anymore. It used to be fine, but I don't know what it is. Chipotle tastes so much like Chipotle. Like you can taste Chipotle from like a mile away, mm-hmm. basically. And you taste it for the rest of the day also in your burps. It's horrible.
It's the guac. The guac gives you pretty intense burps.
The oniony guac.
No, I'm kind of with you. I maybe have Chipotle like once or twice a year now. It's definitely a better, it's probably one of, if not the best fast food option.
You can eat reasonably healthy there.
But for your pizza question, I mean.
I will never give up pizza in my life.
Yeah, my girlfriend, when she talks about the difference and the foods that bother her the most in the U.S., she always goes to the American bread. She just says that she's like, she doesn't touch bread when she's here. She has no interest in anything with bread.
I could see that.
Because she says she doesn't know what the difference is, and I'm sure she can do the research to find out. But she's like, the bread makes me feel like an inflatable, like just just so huge and bloated. And so I think there is good pizza, though. I think, in Jonesboro, Lost Pizza Company, who co-sponsors that tournament, great pizza. I would go there. Little Caesars? I don't know. I don't know if I would feel...
That's fast food pizza.
At that point, I would go to Chick-fil-A. Well, like, if I'm going to get Little Caesars or maybe Papa John's, like, that's no
that's
different
terrible.
To me than Chick-fil-A.
I would... a burger is one of the healthiest things you can eat. But if you go to McDonald's and get a Big Mac, that's one of the worst things you can eat.
Yeah.
Like if you get like...
Same product.
Like one of my favorite meals is you get like a really high quality... I get a gluten-free bread that's actually a keto bread. And I put a high quality mayo, high quality mustard, pickles, grass-fed patty. That's an incredibly healthy meal. But if you get that at McDonald's, then you feel terrible.
Speaking of incredibly healthy meals, we owe a shout out to Scoot from Backstage Organics. Because we are all sponsored by Backstage Organics, and they have been sharing our podcast every week that we drop an episode. He's posting a story, and I love the support for the podcast, but also I would say it's continuously been one of my favorite sponsorships that I have had since I was on the team. I mean, it's the most unique partnership that we have. Mm-hmm. He reaches out in advance, and you can probably provide more backstage context on Scoot, the man himself, because I don't know a lot about his background.
I actually have never met him in person.
I haven't either.
I think he lives out in California.
I think he's a Bay Area.
Bay Area guy. And I think his first passion, Backstage Organics, hence the name Backstage, he works a lot with bands and musicians. And if you go to the Backstage website, he'll showcase all the people he works with.
Yeah, he's a backline.
But I don't know if he's like in this for any like personal gain. I think he's just doing it for the love, because he's not selling a product.
No.
He literally just reaches out to these organic purveyors or healthy purveyors of food and makes amazing connections for us wherever city we're going to. This week, shout out to the turnip truck.
The turnip truck. Yeah, I went there on Tuesday afternoon and got y'all's bags. And this is the second year in a row that I've been there. I suppose a lot of this is going to be second year in a row for me with Backstage Organics. But yeah, they're all ready. And we have these beautiful little goodie bags. Mm-hmm. And we have some gift cards. And I actually, because I was there already, did my shopping for the week at that store.
Joey did the shopping for me. Thank you, Joey.
Yes, I did. And thank you, Joey. I don't know if this is right, but my theory is that Scoot essentially is a backline tech and is very familiar with the touring industry. And from music, you're traveling to a new city, probably more crazy than us. I mean, we get to spend a week in a place. Some of these guys, I have friends of mine who are one of my closest friends. Shout out Joe Alaspa, who worked with Simon on Beyond Disc Golf, worked with Eagle on Eagle's Vlogs. Very important guy in my life. He is the lead guitar tech for Andy Grammer on the road, and also another larger, newer artist, Conan Gray. And they're doing like 40 cities in 40 days. I mean, they don't stop. And so I think Scoot saw, as a disc golf fan and a player himself, as a casual, he saw the same sort of desire to, or the difficulty of finding healthy food. It's so easy when you live in one place. You find your spot and you go there, and that's your spot for all your things. And when you're moving every week, you almost have, in order to get healthy food, you kind of have to be a quasi-local at every event and know the spots. And Scoot kind of takes a lot of that guesswork out of it for us and has these awesome things set up. And so we went, and we're going to have steak tonight. Right after we're done here, Eagle's going to cook us up some steak. That I bought at the turnip truck. You know, you can have some nibbles. Yeah.
We ordered freaking DoorDash burritos.
Well, yeah. Well, I was heading over, and Eagle told me what he wanted to get with his gift card, and we bought. I had the ground beef that we had, that you had this morning, was from the turnip truck.
That was delicious.
Thank
you again for making that.
And yeah, no problem. That was good. But that's been my most proud thing this whole season is how much better we've been eating. And Scoot, we love you. It's a big part of that.
We love Backstage Organics.
And we don't have to say non-sponsored because we're sponsored.
We're sponsored.
Do you want to...
Speaking of sponsorships, I want to make a just super quick disclaimer that I am actually starting to do YouTube sponsorships on my YouTube channel. So I just want to, I don't know if the warning is the right word, but this is obviously completely new to me. And the reason I'm doing it is because obviously I hired Dustin full time with me, and to make this worth his time and our time, adding these sponsorships was just kind of a necessary step. And so far, a lot of great companies have reached out to us to, I don't know what you would call it, collab, I guess.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
And yeah, tomorrow's video is going to be my first ever YouTube video with an ad read, so to speak. And I'm a bit nervous about it. I don't know how I feel about doing that, but it felt like a necessary step.
It's and a big we'll line to cross as a YouTube creator. It's one thing to have the little ads that YouTube puts in, and it is a whole other boat to cut in and say, hey, this video is presented by... Yeah. I remember when my favorite podcast, Talkin' Baseball, now they're... Every episode now that they do starts with an ad read.
Mm-hmm.
And it's definitely like a line to cross. But as a creator myself, I'm very understanding of it, because at the end of the day, you got to make money. Like if you're not making money and you're not like doing better than breaking even for this YouTube venture that you're taking, then it doesn't make sense.
Yeah. I mean, Dustin is, he is grinding. He's filming all day and then editing all night. So for us to make these videos, this just felt like we had to do it. And we just hope people understand, because it's not really what we want to do, but
I've never watched a YouTube video or like by a creator who started doing ad reads and been like, I'm not watching anymore.
Yeah. Maybe I'm just in my head about it and I really shouldn't be.
I think it's easy though to feel that way. I mean, it's not a small threshold to cross. But yeah, I mean, when I worked for Jomez in 2022 and 2023, that was, you know, you have the Patreon, which is one, and you guys have both had
dabbled
in Patreon, mm-hmm. and you've had your positives and your negatives with it. Jomez also has had positives and negatives. When I worked there, it was obviously a huge, huge positive financially for Jomez. And then, yeah, I mean, I don't know who hasn't seen Jomez video with a Jonathan Gomez ad read somewhere mm-hmm. in it. I mean, those were, you know, quintessential. They still might be.
Yeah.
They're on Beyond Disc Golf episodes. So you gotta make your money. And for people who don't understand, a in-video ad financially done the right way can be 10, 20, maybe 30 times more financially lucrative to a YouTube channel than AdSense. I don't know the exact numbers, but let's just say if you ballpark get 200,000 views for a video on YouTube, what's your just your YouTube AdSense? I mean, that's a couple thousand dollars maybe.
Well, it depends on many, many factors, of course, but I would say ballpark $2,000.
Okay, so $2,000, and then let's just say you have obviously now Dustin making these videos who costs a salary, plus the location that you're at. There's a whole, it's just like $2,000 does not even come close to covering the cost of what it took. Like if you contract out, let's just say you contracted Dustin and he's not on salary. I mean, somebody like Dustin comes with a day rate that's pushing $1,000 a day, if not more. I mean, somebody with Dustin's skill set for that kind of a product in the pro media world, it's a very expensive product.
And most of the pro media guys give a disc golf discount.
Oh, for sure. Oh,
there's always disc golf discounts.
I mean, my business does not exist if I don't market to the disc golf market. I have mm-hmm. no choice but to essentially, I mean, I just spent, you know, $5,000 on this camera that I'm going to use now for this season and the other expenses that I take on. And obviously they're very worth it with the amount of content that I have. They pay themselves off, but I can't go in and charge, Ricky Wysocki $2,500-$3,000, for a practice round video. But if Ricky Wysocki went to a pro media company and like thinking, you know, like I want a practice round, and he went out to like an agency that was going to shoot, that's exactly what they would charge him. Like multiple thousands of dollars for the amount of time and technology and skills that it takes to produce that kind of a video. If you do that as me or whoever, I mean, you can't, you have no clients because there's just nobody who can afford that. And they'll just be like, well, I'll just do it myself then.
So you're saying if you want to make it on tour,
good luck.
Yeah.
I mean, I would have a lot of your stuff figured out before you start trying to go out full time on tour. I would really have a good plan of, okay, where is my niche financial streams going to come from? Am I going to be a whatnot streamer? Am I going to be a Patreon person? Am I going to go really hard on YouTube or YouTube Shorts or Instagram? Or am I going to do TikTok? Am I going to just do a podcast? Or am I going to do all of it? And realizing as somebody who sells discs, especially as a bigger athlete, you know, like for me, I sell my own discs. You know, they get shipped to me and I sell them to people. For guys like you, you've got essentially a website that you're not vending your own product at these events because you are big enough that you have that whole system set up by your sponsorship. And so then realizing that every single media outlet that you have, while it might not have to pay you back perfect, it's also affecting all the other ways that you make money. So posting a great viral Instagram video might not, like, Instagram might not pay you back for it, but maybe your disc sales for the month of July might go up because of something like that. And that's being conscious of how all of those social media.
Personally, I've never made any of my YouTube videos for money in terms of like AdSense. I see it as an investment into my brand. It's like you really can't put a value on what a video is doing, especially like my style.
Mm-hmm.
'Cause it's like, you know, generally I get around anywhere from like 8,000 to 15,000 views on most of my videos, but like 8,000 of those people are like pretty hardcore fans.
Yep.
And like, I want to, even if the video doesn't get very many views, like I'm so grateful to the people who consistently watch me. And
I do.
We watched, thank you. We watched some deep dive Eagle McMahon today.
Every now and then I deep dive on your channel.
It's crazy to say that you can deep dive on my channel.
Like 2016 Silver
Cup.
It's
one of the deepest channels on tour.
I was the first YouTube vlogger other than Terry Miller.
It's the deepest.
Why did you decide to do it?
Well, I was growing up, I was a YouTube kid. I watched a bunch of early YouTube vloggers like
who?
CTFXC, Shaytards, there were like some really early people like Smosh. They didn't really vlog, but like the OG YouTube people. And I just thought, you know, no one was doing that in disc golf. And I just thought that it was a cool little niche. It was almost just like a calling. And my first vlog ever was late in 2015, almost 10 years ago. And just me and my phone just talking about disc golf, maybe a little bit of throwing. And I always was, one of my favorite things was watching behind the scenes content of disc golf, because there wasn't a lot of YouTube content for disc golf back then. But I remember like Murder Mike posting like disc golf impressions with like Drew Gibson.
Yes.
Oh my gosh.
That's a classic. Fountain Hills.
And then there was
Ken Climo.
Oh yeah.
Ken Climo, Matt Oram, Germ, like crazy to go back and watch that. But I always really like seeing what the pros' personality was like. What did they do off the course? How did they just joke around? And that's what I did. I wanted to have an archive for myself too, to look back on now. Like I can go back to almost every tournament I've ever played and kind of see what, look at a snapshot of what my week looked like. And that's why, in all honesty, for my own selfish reasons, that's why I make vlogs. So I could have an archive that I can look back on 9 years ago at this point.
You can show your kids.
I can show my kids and just see where I came from, because we were watching the 2016 Silver Cup vlog.
That was something
else.
And
oh my gosh, it truly feels like a different lifetime. Me and Eric Oakley just screaming and making funny noises, me complaining about Mach 3 baskets. It's like,
we were all laughing this morning and everybody's like, this is so like stupid. And I just like looked at them and I was like, this is art. You couldn't recreate this if you tried. The vibes are immaculately unique. There is no, like, you couldn't do it if you tried. It's and so
it's a wine. Like, you can't, if you watched it like the week after it came out, you'd be like, what is this? This is completely irrelevant. Or maybe no, people liked it. I thought it was, I was onto something. I kept doing it. I had good responses. That's what kept me doing it.
Well, and
but now looking back, it's something like truly,
I recommend,
dare I say, special, very unique. And I'm so glad that I decided to do it. Let's just put
it
that
way. Recommend to our listeners here that if you watch any YouTube videos, go to Eagle's channel.
Go
and
watch.
And then filter by oldest and then just kind of like click through some of those videos because some of them are really good.
If you're a diehard,
some of them are absolutely hilarious.
Treat this like if you're a diehard and you're a COVID golfer and you have no idea what we're talking about, this is your new Netflix show. Like, go back to the beginning and just go in order. It was just a totally different
life back then.
And what was your like first introduction to Eagle's vlogs? And what did you initially think about it?
He was a part of it.
I know. That's my question.
10 years ago. I don't remember. I mean, Eagle was just, he was just out there just doing whatever.
I'm still weird, but I was probably even weirder back then. And I was definitely a little bit more extroverted, I would say. I wasn't afraid to shove a camera in someone's face. And I just said what was on my mind. I just talked and I made my own commentary. And I had like a unique perspective on things that I brought to the table.
And
I wasn't afraid to film off the course. Like whenever somebody said, oh, if you film this, no one's going to want to see it. That's exactly what people...
That was your guidebook.
That was my guidebook. Yeah. I was like, I want to film what people don't necessarily expect to see.
Yep.
That's a great take.
And then when you started, because your YouTube channel existed before you started going crazily consistent...
Yeah, I have like 10 videos that were pre my real YouTube start.
I remember those.
2014 to 2018, I had like a couple of videos I made.
It's whenever you got inspired to make a video.
Yeah, I mean, I always wanted to start it. I just never felt like I never owned a laptop. I didn't really have money to invest into anything. And I just never felt like I was settled anywhere. I didn't have a home base. So I never felt like I really had the opportunity. Of course, I mean, nowadays you can make anything happen from anywhere at any time. But I mean, only 12 years ago, things were different.
Oh, so different.
Yeah.
The phones were different. The internet was different. Like, even though it feels not that long ago, it's like it was different back then.
Did you talk to Eagle at all when you decided to start going hardcore?
I don't think so.
No.
I kind of just, I don't know, it was off season 2018 and I was just sitting at home. I just moved to the U.S. full time and I was like, I need to do something with my career. So I went to Amazon or whatever store and I purchased a $2,000 laptop, which was way out of my budget. And I bought a $500 camera. Shout out Canon M50.
I bought that camera from you.
Eagle ended up buying that a couple of years later from me.
And that's that little guy.
I bought a microphone. And the reason, I think I've said this a couple times before, but the reason I so overspent is because I had a laziness problem and I wanted to make sure that I committed to this by just buying high quality, expensive stuff. Like, I mean, $2,000 back then for me was like, I mean, a quarter of my entire existence, basically.
Hi.
So it was crazy, but obviously it extremely paid off for me. And it made me commit.
I remember one of your first vlogs was you talking about a knife cutting vegetables.
I remember that knife. I still have that knife.
You still have that knife?
I still have that knife. And every time I pull it out of the drawer, I think about that I was a better knife promoter than a disc promoter back then. Because I was so mind blown by that knife. You're like, I bought like $180
If I'm going to eat healthy, then I should have a good knife because it'll make it fun to cut vegetables.
That was my theory. And it worked for like a month.
Wow. We should bring that knife out on the road one week.
It's not sharp anymore, but we could sharpen it. It is a good
sharpener.
Knife.
I have the sharpener with me.
I was just mind blown. I was cutting tomatoes and I was like, oh my God, this is the most satisfying thing ever.
It glides right through it.
And it's just so impressive to me that, you know, this ended up, I would say both of your separate YouTube presences are a gigantic factor behind the respective contracts that you each have. And that's like, you know, maybe you post a viral video and your sales for a month tick up. But at the end of the day, the real power of that YouTube channel is essentially the heartbeat of your brand as a disc golfer for the two of you.
It's how people relate and connect to us.
Mm-hmm.
Because if we're not posting, they just see the player. And of course, we've been pretty successful in our careers and we probably would have a good following, but it's definitely the X factor.
100%.
And if anyone's listening to this, you have to attach an X factor to yourself if you want to be big in disc golf. And like, obviously, I think number one is the driver of playing well on the course. But if you can couple that with another avenue for us, it's YouTube, then it's going to be massive for you. And you're going to set yourself apart from your colleagues.
Mm-hmm. 100%.
I mean, there's not a lack of trying nowadays on tour.
No, like everyone.
Disc golf media is so oversaturated right now, in my opinion. I don't know if I'm just in it, and that's why. And it's so different than what it was a couple of years ago.
Everyone's doing practice rounds.
The amount mm-hmm. of videos I see is like you can't, even if you tried, you couldn't watch them all.
And they all get views. They all get decent views. I would say I'm continuously surprised and impressed at how much consistency of viewing a lot of these channels and videos are getting, and just shows the loyalty of diehard disc golf fans. Like Eagle was alluding to earlier, sometimes it's not about the quantity of fan. It's about the quality of each mm-hmm. one of those fans. And yeah, I think that's a huge X factor when it comes to creating that loyal base of people.
Speaking of YouTube, I just got to do a quick shout out. My dad.
Oh my gosh.
Right. I forgot.
My dad and our good friend, Dave Batchelder. This is crazy. They started a YouTube channel and my dad didn't tell me until today that they did. They've been working on a video for like the past week. I think they have two videos. The second one's not out yet. The channel is called McBatch. So a combination of my dad's last name, my last name, McMahon, and Dave's Batchelder. And I don't even really know what the channel is going to be about. I think if you watch the pilot episode, it's about disc golf coaching. My dad is going to be a coach and Dave is the student, but it's going to be out there. It's going to be zany and it's going to be kind of weird.
It had a flair of 2016 Eagle Vlog to it.
It definitely did. And I've always wanted to do something with my dad in that regard, but I always felt like it might be a little contrived if me and my dad do something. Not saying that we won't ever do something, but I think Dave is the perfect personality to contrast my dad because you wouldn't expect it. You wouldn't expect it at first glance, but I think people are going to really like Dave's personality. I would like to see more of Dave in the disc golf world.
Because I love Dave.
Dave is one of the coolest people that I know.
100%.
I think this could be big for him and my dad. So go check out McBatch, subscribe, and I'm excited to see how their journey goes.
The end of episode one was epic. That little, the little kind of cinematic compilation out at Harlow. That was in the sunset. I was mm-hmm. very impressed with that, with the shooting and the editing. So it was
apparently Dave spent like 40 hours editing that video.
Yeah, I could, mm-hmm. I don't know how much he edits, but I could see that there was a lot of work.
He did a lot of editing
for
his, for Cloud Nine.
Yeah, he did.
So he got good. He got good at that. So, you know, we'll see what that grows into. I'm excited for episode two.
You want a wine?
I think we're hitting a time here where we got to...
We are. We are definitely on the end.
Maybe we'll save the wine for next week.
I like it. What time are we at?
Hour 15.
An hour and 15. Do you want me to talk about my segment, or should we just save it for another week?
You can save.
I think this was a nice round episode. Great.
This was we vibed.
That was just one where there's not a ton of segments.
We went in every direction for about 20 minutes.
I wanted this podcast, because some of these episodes are going to be like this, where we don't have a bunch of rigid segments, because obviously
let's
we're
do one segment.
An event. Okay. All
right. You know what I'm talking about, right? It's email.
Oh, yeah. Okay. Yes. Yeah. I messed up because two episodes ago at the end, I said that I was going to announce an email in the next episode, and I did go and make the email and then forgot to announce it last episode. So we have a Gmail now that I have created, that you guys can send your thoughts to, and we will put the email in the description. I tried to just do scoville@gmail.com, but that was already taken. So it's Lil Scoville Units.
Oh my God.
So Lil Scoville Units @gmail.com.
Also in the description.
How
do you spell Scoville?
I looked it up.
I think it's
I looked it up before I made it. S-C-O-V-I-L-L-E.
Yeah, that's right. I say confidently.
S-C-O-V-I-L. Yes, that's right. Okay. That's right. LilScovilleUnits@gmail.com. Obviously, you can continue to DM me because I do see most of those. But yeah, this is going to be a great place for people to put in questions, to put segment ideas. Two different people sent me a video, like an animated video about airplane boarding after our last wine. And I love the engagement that we're getting from everybody doing this. And so this is just one more channel that you can use to communicate directly to the three of us. So with that, we got to send it to our new finisher, Simon Lizott. He finishes these episodes these days because we decided that last week.
Didn't you have an email?
What?
You didn't? I thought you had an email.
What do you
mean? Somebody had a question.
They sent it here?
I thought you... Didn't you mention that?
No.
Oh.
We have... No, this is the first time anyone...
Oh.
This is the first time...
That would be impressive if they...
Oh, my God.
They telepathically...
No, yeah, that would be...
They just guessed it.
They just guessed
it. And they got it right.
And then they just sent us an email.
Oh. Well, guys, we need a podcast name, and then we can wrap it up.
What was the... We had one.
I forgot what Eagle said, though. I didn't write it down. I failed.
It was like...
You misspoke on something.
Something flavored.
Do it for the flavor?
Do it for the flavor.
Is that what it is?
I think.
What were you trying to say?
I forget what I was trying to say. Do it for the...
No, it wasn't do it for...
No, it was something else.
I was talking about like saving food for later, and I said saving food for flavor?
Save it for the flavor.
Save
it for the flavor.
That's what it is. Yeah. Save it for the flavor. That's what we're we're naming this.
Save it for the flavor.
Save it for the flavor.
All right. Thanks for listening, everyone.
Thank you so much.
This was Crushed Pepper episode 12. 13?
12 or 13? I think it's 13.
Oh, we are...
Lucky 13.
Killing it. Wish us luck this week. I'm going to try to three-peat. Eagle's going to try that I don't three-peat. And Joey is going to hopefully rest and rehab his back, so he'll be back on the course soon enough.
And going to try out his new fancy camera out tomorrow and this weekend, shooting pictures and slow-mo, which for a guy who's done a lot of different jobs on tour, now I get to do the Kevin Hoover role. I get to go and shoot really sexy footage, and I am super excited to see what I can do. So
I hope you brought your camo gear.
Ooh, I got to try to
blend
in.
Then you're the real Kevin.
Then they don't even see you. You just get away. You just steal pictures without anyone noticing. All right, I'll let you finish this off, Simon.
That's all. Thanks all for the support. We are done, and we'll see you next week.
Bye.
Peace. Should we sing a song? Let's try to sing a song for Will at the end.
The snow glows white on the mountain tonight.
Eagle doesn't know that song.
Not a footprint to be seen. A kingdom of isolation. And it looks like I'm the queen. The
good,
wind
that's good.
Is howling like this swirling storm inside.